Up, up, up. I hope everything's up. I hope everything's recording correctly. It's been a day of just fixing stuff. It's been a morning of just fixing stuff. Oh, and I need to hit the streaming button. Can't forget the streaming button.
Oh, wine list, sick label. Yeah. Or one by one, scan many bottles.
Then you get home and do the same thing.
Hey, Cheryl, happy birthday.
Oh, thank you.
Why they build all these apartments for...
Is it your birthday?
It's my birthday.
Well, happy birthday.
It's Cheryl's birthday, everybody.
Happy birthday
to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Cheryl. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you, guys.
Esmeralda would have gotten the same treatment, but I forgot when it was her birthday. I am a bad host.
Finish. Okay, ahorita.
Well, congratulations for making it another circle around the sun.
Another circle around the sun, yes. Another trip around the
world. It's more of an all oval.
See, they ask me what I learn at computer club, and I tell them I learn something new every week.
Yes, this week is going to be the Vino.
And I just send it to a whole bunch of people that it's a great app.
Already got it out there.
No, this is awesome. So we've started our meeting with app recommendations over
right.
here. What's the app you guys are recommending?
It's called Vivino. V-I-V-I-N-O. Vivino.
Vivino.
And it's for wine connoisseurs.
Or anybody.
Actually, you stand at Walmart and you scan the label of the wine and you figure out if it's got less than 3 stars. Our friend Jim Cunningham says leave it on the shelf no matter how much it is. And it's been a great app. We've had a lot of fun with it. And the girls just discovered that we can actually scan restaurant wine lists and it'll tell you which one is which.
You don't have to call it solving it.
That's right. You are your own.
That's awesome.
We're having a lot of fun.
I also think it's pretty classy to stand in Walmart choosing your wine with an app.
You got a problem with that?
Yeah. Is there a star for every dollar that bottle costs?
It tells us the Canadian equivalent of the price.
Yeah, you set in your location.
Oh, there you go.
Well, at least we aren't in our pajamas when we do it.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Not yet. If... we'll look for you in Lay's and see if you're in pajamas. The store needs to be a little closer to home.
Fuzzy slippers are a dead.
Okay, well, let's introduce our club because this is the official first meeting of 2019, and I'm happy to see so many people here. This is amazing. I'm a bit discombobulated. I woke up this morning and set up the website. Well, thought I was setting up the website for today's meeting and found it was down. I have no idea how long it's been down. And so I was doing frantic customer support stuff with our host going, what's going on? Why isn't this site working? And they finally got it working. And so everything's back up and working the way it's supposed to. And then I get here, I hook up the equipment, and none of the cameras are working. It's
Yay. It's
like Y2K. But everything seems to be working now. But welcome back. This is the San Carlos Computer Club. I'm Scott Stimson with International Computer Solutions, and I see no new faces. Is there anybody here that's never been here before? This is my kind of meeting. I hope that means there's really low expectations, because I'm not very organized.
There's 21 of us.
And there's 21 of us.
24.
You've missed a few.
Not counting me, because I don't count.
We hit 25.
I'm glad you finally realized that.
Yeah. Yeah. ¿Qué pasa?
Maybe you want to leave it there.
There we go.
It's my storage pile over there. Okay, so I know you have brought Christmas tech topics because we all had technology in our lives during the vacation break. And Linda has jumped ahead of the pack, saying she's got two items she wants to bring up. Only because you lost your turn. We all like listening to Linda.
I want you first. The first question is, has anybody ever bought anything on
Superama?
Has anybody? It's a Walmart company online in Mexico, but when you go on there and you try to register, they're asking you for the store. Well, we don't have any stores around here, but I'm wondering why it keeps coming up on our internet right here, because normally they don't, you know, if you don't have the establishment around your area.
So this is an online realtor that you buy?
No, it's an online Walmart.
Online.
It's called Superama.
Wait, what do you mean an online Walmart? Walmart's an online Walmart.
Right, but it's called Superama. And they have great prices, that's why I asked.
Superama.
Is Superama is the store that you think should
Superama.com.mx.
But yet, Superama. The closest store around here is somewhere down near Obregon or something.
Walmart.com.mx.
So, no. It's not a Walmart store you're looking for. It's a Superama store.
Right, it's an online. And
why do you keep calling it Walmart? I'm confused.
Because if you go down the bottom, it tells you it's a Walmart company. Because
it looks kind of like a Walmart.
Oh, that's interesting. Like they bought an on. Bought this. So
well, no, I don't know about that.
Right. The reason I did it was, you know, during the holiday, Walmart and Sam's Club and all that have great prices on those.
Yeah, look at that. Walmart Mexico.
Right.
Yeah, Corporativa de Walmart Mexico.
But
Walmart.
When you try to order something online,
they take PayPal.
They do. They make you register. So I registered and tried to use my Walmart password. But then it asks you for the nearest location, and when you click on it, there's no nearest location comes up, and so they won't let you in. But the reason I did it was at Christmas time.
Hey, I'll give you one better. They call our zip code invalid.
What is our zip code?
85506.
Yes, but they use 85504.
Is it 16? No, it's 06.
'06?
Yeah.
Right. But they use 85504.
85504?
Which is a Wymas.
That doesn't count either. It doesn't count because we live in Wymas.
No, 85504 doesn't work either.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I wonder if I just...
Well, I was just wondering if anybody had done that. And the other thing I wanted to find out is anybody that has mega cable having issues?
No.
Everybody has issues with mega.
You might need to be more specific. There's a lot of people with issues here.
I have, because I have this IPTV, I have several people that have mega cable that are having issues not getting certain channels.
Like TV channels.
Right.
Well, that's interesting.
Right. And I've been to their house, we've tried different things. Then that little brownout we had the other day.
I was not part of that. I wouldn't have known that had gone on if somebody hadn't been reporting it to me.
It was a good jolt, and it knocked a lot of stuff out from people.
I had to reboot.
What day was that?
Yeah, when was that?
It was just a couple days. Was it Sunday?
We had power out Saturday night.
It started raining.
Maybe it was Saturday.
Saturday night we had power out. Right out. We kept trying, and then it was out for about an hour.
I heard it was a big outage in this area, but it didn't affect the Ranchitos.
Was just a jolt. Yeah. Somebody in the Bahia, I went to their house, they got the jolt really good. And then I noticed, I told her, you don't have your TV or anything on surge protectors.
Right.
Oh. I said, you're lucky you didn't lose your TV.
Right.
Because it knocked the passwords out. It knocked the little password that you use like to get into
this
my
isn't
TV
the TV
service.
Box? Yeah. It like reset the TV box.
But it knocked the TV out too. So, and I told her, I want you to go get a... Make sure you get surge protectors. Good surge protectors, not those white strips. Mm-hmm. They aren't surge protectors.
Yeah.
Just electrical strips.
Well, maybe it's a good time to reiterate that you can tell if it's a good surge protector. If you can't tell, it's a bad surge protector. Even if it is a surge protector, if you can't tell it's a surge protector, it's the wrong device.
How can you tell?
Well, there should be an indicator light on it.
Right.
doesn't
right.
mean
and it should say something like surge or protection.
Correct.
And if it's not lit up, you throw it away and you buy another one.
If you're not spending about $29, $30 on a Belkin or one of the good big surge protectors,
well,
those white strips are not surge protectors.
Yeah, those are two different. I think you can get a good surge protector for $17 to $20, $25. I don't think you should have to spend a lot of money. But a bad surge protector doesn't have an indicator light. Those white strips that Linda's talking about that a lot of people have are actually just multi-contacts with circuit breaker.
Correct.
There's a big difference between surge protection and circuit breaker protection. The easiest way I've ever thought about it is circuit breaker protection would be if you were going to hook up your blender, right? Because you're pulling all this current when you go to make margaritas. And when you pull that much current, you should not have your computer plugged into it. The surge protector is for jolts of current coming down your line. And the surge protector gets eaten up over time. And so every surge protector, after a certain amount of life, needs to be replaced. And that's what the indicator light is for, is making it clear when to replace it.
What Big Don did in the whole house?
Okay, the whole house surge protection. This is an interesting fluctuating topic that changes over time. But what Don did specifically... and a lot of you may have it. I have it in my house as well. Is a disaster recovery surge protection, and it's almost like a fuse that's out in your MUFE in where the meter is. And what happens is if you get jolted by something like a lightning bolt or a doubling of voltage from the CFE, it will burn out that fuse. I'm calling it a fuse. It'll burn that out and knock out your power. So all of a sudden you'll have no electricity in your house, and you're going to need an electrician to help you sort it out. But what you haven't done is you haven't set the dryer on fire, right? There isn't fire coming out of your outlets. All your equipment is fine. I should say your equipment is fine if you use surge protectors in the house, because what this is protection against that catastrophic damage. But there still will be surges in the network during that catastrophic occurrence. And so you still need surge protectors throughout the house. And we're talking about Dawn's system.
Speaking of Dawn's system, though, Josh, a lot of you know Josh, the contractor, he's running into a point where a lot of the surge protectors that he put in are now no good.
Are you talking about the whole house? The ones that Don developed?
Yeah. Right. Josh has been running into that they're not working anymore.
The lifetime guarantee.
How does he know that?
But how can he tell it's not working?
There must be some tests they can do, electrical tests they can do to find out if they're working.
There's no test.
I called it a fuse on purpose because I looked at the technology. Well, maybe that's what's going on. Like an incident like what happened over the weekend would burn those out. I mean, if we had a jolt of electricity, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a bunch of houses gone serviced.
I think they have protection, but it's burned out at that point.
That's right. Yeah.
It's like a fusible link that'll heat up and the link.
But the way they would know it doesn't work any longer is they wouldn't have electricity.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you that whatever day that was it Sunday? No, Saturday. Whatever day it was, I have a voltage regulator on my TV.
Mm-hmm.
That thing was...
It got toasted?
No, it didn't get toasted, but I have it plugged into a surge protector, too.
Yeah?
The voltage regulator into the surge protector, but that was going crazy.
It was just hopping?
It was doing the thing.
But it's done. It's done hopping?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and your shirt still works?
Yeah.
Because that's one of the voltage regulators that we get around here are the devices that you should use for voltage regulation, which is a different problem. But a bad or going bad voltage regulator, you'll hear it popping up and down. It click, 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 click.
Well, the lights dimmed way down, and then the voltage regulator was like...
clicking and acting goofy.
That's fine now.
Yeah, and I personally, if I had that experience, I'd immediately be running around my house unplugging everything. Voltage regulator, surge protectors, all my equipment, all my TVs, all my satellite dishes, everything. Because when you hear that voltage regulator going click, 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 that is literally voltage coming down high, coming down low, coming down high, coming down low through your line. And you are getting, if you could imagine a three-year-old with a light switch, you just put years of life on that voltage regulator and quite possibly your equipment. So you want, when you recognize you're having a problem, you want to disconnect that stuff or it'll end up, you'll be replacing it at the very least.
Well, that's why it's really important to have those good surge protectors that you have your stuff plugged in, because they will pop.
But you can just turn off the breakers.
I installed a whole house.
That's easier.
Do you have the same thing over at Jan's place now?
No.
No. So
it's much easier than unplugging everything.
Just turn the breakers off to the house?
What applies?
Well, the other thing is, I don't know if anybody else has any different recommendation. I believe you use both devices in conjunction. I believe you use the regulator and the surge protector together. And I plug the regulator into the wall, and I test it because I'm that way. And I call that good electricity coming out of there. And then I plug a surge protector into the regulator, because whenever the regulator is working, it's inducing a surge. If it does have to pop up or pop down, it creates a surge in that moment. I would assume that if a surge comes through the wall to the regulator, it would pass to the surge protector as well. So whether it popped up or popped down, if all of a sudden you were doing 140 volts, and now your regulator drops you down to 130 volts, that surge is still protected by the surge protector on the other end.
What appliances are most susceptible? I mean, I've got a refrigerator that's lasted 23 years through all kinds of things. The TV is on a surge protector, a good one, and the computer is on a surge. I mean, you could have 15 different... and I don't have 15. I have 3.
There was a large discussion, this week on either Bart's board or on Viva concerning that very subject. And it seemed to me like the experts concluded that if it had a motor, like a refrigerator, you weren't exposed. But it was where you didn't have a motor that you had a problem.
And maybe that's not the right way to look at it, because a surge could definitely burn out a motor, but it requires so much more to burn out a motor than it does to burn out a computer board. That's really the issue you're dealing with, is we live in a world of electronics that are fragile, and we live in a world that's not fragile. This Mexican environment, Mexico's hard on stuff. And you're not going to expect to have a problem with your washer and dryer and your air conditioner, though. Yeah, I mean, there are definitely stories around town where the CFE transformer blew up in their neighborhood and they had to replace air conditioners and refrigerators. That they are, I mean, those extreme examples do exist.
CFE replaced ours. This happened about 15 years ago. They blew up the whole neighborhood. Microwave, ceiling fans, TV sets, everything. And they replaced everything except the ceiling fans.
Oh, that's interesting.
And they didn't do the ceiling fans because they couldn't find the part for the. They'd had to order the part from the States and they refused to do it.
It was a specific ceiling fan they wouldn't replace.
So
okay.
We had to repair those ourselves.
Our LED lights.
We had some guys
more
in Guaymas that repaired everything.
Jim Garwood went through the same thing.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He did, didn't he? I remember that. And Kimberly did, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are LED lights more susceptible?
So this is an interesting question. Are LED lights more susceptible? We've got LED lights everywhere now. The reason LED lights work is because they have a power transformer built into the base of the light bulb. It's actually insanely complicated technology that we've just taken for granted for making light. But there's a transformer that dials down the light. There's a circuit that changes it into DC voltage.
Aren't you referring to the fluorescent bulbs, not the...
No, I'm talking about the LED bulbs. The LED bulbs that you put...
Incandescent.
Yeah, incandescent styled LED bulbs. The ones we've been replacing in our house. We've been replacing the fluorescents with these LEDs. And fluorescents suffer the same problem. What these bulbs have is the incandescent light bulb. Let's go back to the incandescent light bulb was quite literally a thin piece of wire that would heat up when given enough electricity. And light is almost an afterthought. Heat is really the main product of an incandescent light bulb. We're fortunate it lights up as well, or we would be sitting in the dark. We'd be warm, but we'd be sitting in the dark.
It's because it's in a vacuum, too, that it actually
works. You're right, yeah. Yeah, it would fall apart if it was exposed to, if it wasn't in a vacuum. They're very fragile, those filaments. But the beauty of that technology was you basically just put it between two hot wires and you got light. LEDs and fluorescents, but LEDs very specifically, do not work anything like that. An LED light bulb works more like your Roku or your laptop than it does a light bulb. It has got a circuit that switches it to DC voltage. It uses silicon. It uses a transformer that's an IC chip. And so it takes 120 volts and it runs it through this computer power supply and results in lighting up the LEDs. The LEDs themselves don't require much current at all. And that's the reason we're able to do the equivalent of 60 to 100 watts in an LED that takes only 5 to 20 watts. It requires so little current. But you have put this transformer, this computer circuit in between the 120 volts and your light source. So I would say that LED lights are as susceptible, maybe even more fragile in these circumstances. Hopefully there's some give in the product, but I think it comes down to manufacturers how fragile they've decided to make those bulbs.
Why do they only have 60 watts and not 100 and 200 watts for the LEDs?
I bought a 75 at Home Depot the other day.
Yeah, and I saw 100 watt listed recently.
Mm-hmm. So is 100 watt going to be more susceptible?
No, I think it would be exactly the same. Yeah, I think it really comes down on the side of the manufacturer, and they're light bulb manufacturers. They had a cabal to determine how long a light bulb should last back in the 20s. They've lived that lie all the way up till now. I think that what you want to be thinking about as far as lighting in the future, I believe this is going to happen this year. We're going to start seeing this, is you're going to be able to buy a light bulb. And light is a secondary issue. The primary issue will be something else. The primary will be it's a smart speaker or it's part of your mesh network, so it extends your wireless. I really do imagine that what we're going to see by the end of this year is you're going to be able to outfit your house with smart bulbs, and that will extend and make your Wi-Fi network more robust. And you'll be able to have smart in each one of your rooms. That's right. Because they will be listening to you.
They're watching and listening.
Yeah. That's become very clear. They're all listening. They're all listening. I don't know if you saw, Amazon just released one of their numbers. They never told us before. There's over 100 million smart speaker devices in use, right? Or Amazon smart. So that's like 1 in 3 people are being spied on in their house by these devices.
So what's more susceptible? Fans with motors, refrigerators, microwaves, what?
Bob, when you think of more susceptible, I think you should think the electronics that you've known for your life are not. Those are the things that are relatively safe in these, air conditioners, fans, refrigerators, freezers. I mean, the kind of things that we considered appliances back 30 years ago are not really susceptible to these surges. They'll do damage. I mean, given enough time and enough surge, it'll hurt them as well. But it's nothing compared to how fragile our information technology is. Our laptops, our cell phones, our these smart bulbs that I'm talking about. A smart refrigerator. I can't think of anything that would be more infuriating, and I've dealt with it at the bed and breakfast in Alaska, is a motherboard going out on a refrigerator and having to toss the whole refrigerator.
Your computer is 12 volts?
Not necessarily.
Really?
Yeah. In fact, it's only been in this last year they've started to standardize on things like power supplies for computers.
What is a computer?
It's all over the board. It depends on the manufacturer.
It could be
12, could be 19. HP put out just mini series of laptops that were between 18.5 to 19 volts. And it used to be the way that they would guarantee their control over certain aspects of that market. Like, I don't know if you guys, well, I'm sure you can remember when buying a power supply for your computer, you had to consider buying a new computer. Right? When you'd have a laptop, you get here in Mexico and you forgot your power supply, or a surge burned out the power supply. And you're looking at a $150 replacement just to plug your computer in. We've gone way past that now. You can get a power supply for a computer online for about $25, $30. It's no longer do I buy a new computer decision. But it was for a while there, because they had so much control over that aspect of the computer.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So are the plugs that are different sizes? There's all kinds of plug sizes.
That's right.
Okay. If you can take something from one appliance because you lose your, or you can't find your...
What you want for a power supply for a laptop is to get a product called a battery eliminator, or a laptop power supply, a generic laptop power supply. And you can get them at places like JG's Computers or Garcia's. They might even be selling them in Walmart by now. It's really the rise of those products that dropped this gray market of power supplies down to a reasonable price. Because if my power supply for my ASUS burned out, it now has to compete against a third party building the power supply for it. And it has to price compete with that. And so their genuine power supply is right down there, real close to the same price as a power supply that would work on any laptop. But it doesn't work on any laptop because there's a standard. It works on any laptop because they built that power supply to be adjustable, either automatically adjustable or with a physical switch and with different heads on it, so that it'll plug into different pieces of equipment.
Is it dangerous if you have a plug that fits into the computer, which is not necessarily for the computer?
Does it fit is the worst test.
If it fits,
it's the worst test.
Really?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it is like I'm sitting on this Tecate seat. If I fit in it, does not mean it's going to hold all my weight.
That's a good analogy.
Yeah, Ed.
Speaking of power supplies, I dropped my computer right on the plug, and the power supply plug broke.
Ooh.
I need to buy a whole power supply. Is there somebody in town that can snip it and put a new end on it?
I would say probably have to buy a new power supply, because it's on the plug-in end of it. Yeah. Well, what kind of computer is it?
HP.
An HP.
About a $40 item.
Yeah. Yeah, and you might be able to get one immediately, because I've seen HPs and Dells and generics and JG computers. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I would mess around with trying to get it. I mean, I don't know what HP is doing with their power supplies, but I can tell you with power supplies like an Apple power supply, there's a whole bunch of cables in there. There's a lot of stuff going on between charging the battery and providing power. a power supply really is a computer in itself. It monitors your battery.
So it's not a two-wire system in there, probably not.
Not on that end of it. On the other end of it, it is. But it's a three-wire. It should be a three-wire system. There should be a ground in there.
What's that box you were talking about? A piece.
Battery eliminator is one of the words that they use. That might be an old term, though. You might actually find it as generic laptop power supply or just laptop power supply because there's so many of them that are produced now.
Well, don't a lot of them, they all have different ends on them.
Well, when
that's
you,
a problem.
Yeah, when you buy a generic laptop power supply, yeah, they typically come with a set of ends. Mm-hmm. So you fit them to match. It really, Bob, fitting it to... is the last part in that equation. Is will it fit? Is like you got it, now you got to find the right size to make it fit in there. Depending on how much you've paid for the battery or for the laptop, the generic laptop power supply, you might actually have to rotate the pin, the tip. So it might fit this way, and this is very frustrating. A power supply has a barrel jack on it. The outside of the barrel could be positive or negative, and the pin could be positive or negative. I'm talking about power supplies, people. Power supplies down here. Okay? I got your attention? Power supplies.
Okay, I don't think so.
You need...
Done there.
I got Ed's attention. Since the generic power supply won't know whether you've got positive on the outside or positive on the inside or negative on the inside, then you're going to have to discover that. You're going to have to look at the power supply. It may say on the power supply whether its tip or pin is positive. Or it might be a graphic. There's definitely not one on my laptop, but there might be a graphic next to it that indicates where the positive is. But if it's not on the power supply and it's not on the laptop, I'm not going to say just try it because that's a good way to blow something. I think you're looking, doing Google searches for other people that have run into this problem. You're looking for at least somebody that's selling a genuine power supply and they've noted it, which is positive. And I wouldn't use anything until you knew which is positive, which is negative, because you could pop something on your motherboard. Yes, Dan.
where would one get a voltage regulator around here?
JG Compressors.
Yeah, but you're not limited to that. You might walk into the Telmex office and find one for sale. It's a real common device. A voltage regulator?
To plug in to
Walmart?
Right. Yeah, Walmart, Sam's Club.
And you do it on TV. That's all you can have for
JG. I don't think, JG's, Garcia's. I don't believe our Lay's has them anymore. They did for a while, but you could go to the Lay's in town, and they would sell one, as well as Soriana sells one. More than one. They got a couple there, competitive prices.
Linda was saying if it's on your TV, the voltage regulator, that's all you can have plugged into the television.
Hold on one second. So as far as voltage regulation, surge protection, Linda,
hello?
You would recommend both
what?
A surge protector and a voltage regulator?
Yeah, I mean, I have my voltage regulator. I think we had that discussion.
Yeah.
And we looked it up. You're supposed to plug the voltage regulator into the surge protector.
No, it's the reverse.
It's the reverse.
You're not protecting the regulator. You're protecting the equipment on the other side of the regulator.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you can, if you buy a regulator, you can only plug one thing into it, the TV. You can't plug multiple things into the back of that regulator.
No, that's
because
not.
Yes, they told me those regulators.
They who?
No.
I think the guy at JG told me those regulators don't have enough to have anything else in them but the TV.
No, what? They're wrong. Unless you're talking about laser printers, if you're trying to put something like a laser printer next to it, or a refrigerator, or I don't know, power tools, because they have about 1,000 watts. A lot of them have like 700 to 1,000 watts of power. So In fact, it's really old thinking because the old CRT, the old TV sets, would draw a lot of current and could affect whether you could plug anything else into it.
Well, how much do our flat screen TVs draw? Like a 50-inch TV?
Yeah, like 20 to 40 watts.
Depends whether it's LED or...
Well, it's. I mean, let's make the assumption we're all using flat screens now.
Right.
Yeah. If it's a flat screen that isn't one of the very first generation, then it's going to have at most 75 watts. I mean, it is not a high. I mean, there was a time when the TV set could be blamed on a large use of the electricity in your house, and that's just not the case anymore.
Okay, the most intelligent person in the whole club. Probably is Linda, and
wait, I'm not in that list.
And then
that hurts. You hurt my feelings.
And she's got it backwards. So which is which now? Say it one more time.
I thought we had this discussion.
We've had this discussion
and
before.
Now I have my voltage regulator plugged into the surge protector.
Okay. If you plug the voltage regulator into the surge protector, you are protecting the voltage regulator from surges, which is not necessary. For a Mexican voltage regulator.
Okay, so which goes which?
You plug the regulator into the wall, and then you plug a surge protector into the regulator. And then you plug your... Yes. And then you plug the equipment into the surge protector.
Just a minute.
And I know this is right because I've been having this discussion for over 20 years in Mexico. Now, oh, and Jim, I saw your hand was up when we were talking about this. What's your opinion on this?
If you're going to buy one, get yourself a battery backup, a UPC, with a voltage regulator built in.
Yeah.
And I've got my stereo, because I have an amp for my TV, the computer in the front, everything plugged into this thing. I can walk out, turn off my power. My music's playing, I'm watching TV, it doesn't matter, and it regulates the power.
And
your voltage
also,
because they're not that expensive. Yeah. And your biggest
$70 isn't a lot of money for a power supply like
your
that.
Your biggest hurt to all your components that you were asking about is a brownout.
Right.
That's the worst kind of damage you could do.
So you want to regulate your voltage. A drop in voltage will take out a TV or anything else like that.
So
higher voltage they take, lower voltage they don't.
Yeah, most TVs are rated 120 to 240 volts because they're sold overseas as well. But nothing is rated at 90 volts. Like running something at lower voltage is much more dangerous for your equipment than higher voltage. Yeah. And to add to Jim's point, I mean, I completely agree with Jim. To add to his point, he was saying get a battery backup with a voltage regulator. That is a difficult product to find in the States. And I don't recommend it in the States because those are fragile products. You want, if you get into a voltage regulator battery backup, get it here in Mexico. It is only about $70. It's like, I mean, it's something like a 1,500 pesos to 2,000 pesos. And Walmart carries it, and they call them no breaks. That's the name of the product. And most Mexicans are familiar with the no break. No break. It does not, many times if you're getting a good deal on it, it doesn't have surge protection built into it. It has, and which is fine because you can just add a surge protector to it.
The no break is a regulator, right?
It's a regulator with a battery.
But don't you have to plug each individual thing into this? How would you run everything in your house off of one?
You would.
Yeah. You can't.
You would buy one of these for your stations.
Exactly. Yeah. So you're not just talking $70. You're talking $70 here, and here.
Well, again, we're just talking about it where you'd need a battery. Like if you had a desktop computer.
In my office, at my TV, you know, all those places.
Your entertainment center?
Yeah.
If you have a desktop computer, it doesn't have a battery built into it. A no-break is a great solution for those areas. If you have a laptop that you run, you really don't need to be too concerned about a battery backup because it's got a backup battery built into it. Most people are running desktop or laptop computers and tablets in the first place.
Well, TV then and computer. That's about big.
Yeah, those are the areas that I would be concerned about.
Okay, I have a question.
Okay, hold on a second. Maggie jumped in, and then we'll get you next, okay?
And
that is actually the advice. That's the advice on cell phones now. That's advice on laptop batteries. Keep it topped up. That will extenuate the life of that battery throughout the years. Unplug everything.
What else do you have on your list? You beat that one to death. Yeah.
Well, let me Oh, why is this the surge? Okay, what do you got?
Outlet, surge protector, voltage regulator, loads computer. So the surge protector would take the hit of the surge, protecting both the voltage regulator and the computer.
I don't know where you're getting that. Where?
Right here. It's on this forum.
Okay, so who's it from, though? Oh, it's APC?
Yeah.
Okay, so they're talking about their voltage regulator.
Right.
And their voltage regulator is very fragile. And that's why I say don't buy these things in the States.
We're bought it here at JG Computer. He told me to only plug the TV into the box. That is it. Into the voltage regulator.
Okay, he's wrong. He's wrong. I'll be happy to look over what you're looking at there, but it's...
No, the guy at JG Computer told me to only use it for one item, the TV.
Yeah, he's
That's
wrong.
All I have is the TV plug.
You should put a surge protector on it.
I do, but I mean the voltage regulator. He told me to only use it for
one item. I understand what you're saying, but those voltage regulators are rated up to 700 to 1,000 watts. Maybe you should bring in your voltage regulator so we can look at it and see why he would be recommending only one.
So
definitely.
Yeah.
Can we move on?
Yeah. Well, I wanted. What was the?
During a storm, you have to unplug.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. Thank you. That's the point I wanted to reiterate, is that. Thank you. Is that this is all protection gear when it's out of your control. This is all because you went to the store and they had a brownout. Because you left your house for the weekend and you forgot to unplug stuff. Which I don't recommend. If you take off on vacation, unplug all your stuff. Or circuit breaker, if that's the way you want to do it. Turn off the whole house. But this stuff is for when it's out of your control. If you're in your home and a lightning storm starts showering around you, turn off your house. Save all this equipment. Save the protection gear, too. Because you don't want to have to be replacing voltage regulators and surge protectors when you could just unplug them from the wall.
So what would that do if you had a security system that was attached to your computer? I mean, computerized security system. You turn everything off and you don't have any security.
You're right. Yeah, you don't. I mean, you're going to have to... It really is the same question that we come to with security and convenience, is that you're balancing your security versus your convenience. If you're concerned about the house's security, then you may be willing to take the inconvenience of having to replace the protection gear. I mean, and that you only you guys can make that decision. Or should. I mean, in a good installation, it should have a battery backup. Yeah.
You know, the other thing you can do is put in capacitor boxes on your lines.
Yeah.
And they're easy. Actually, they're like air conditioning capacitors. Regulates your voltage. It also cuts down your electrical bill because your main draw on your electricity is when motors start.
Right.
So ceiling fans, compressors, all those... When they start, that's the biggest draw.
Where do you get those?
Jim, do you have some information on that? It seems like we've had this conversation before.
With you guys.
Yeah, I know.
But you can build your own.
No, nobody here is building their own capacitor box.
You can buy it online.
I don't have the link. I bring in the link check.
What do you call it?
Capacitor box or a voltage line regulator?
I've seen those. They're very cheap.
About $80.
Yes.
Excuse me. Don't have a question. We're losing. You've lost total control. Easy.
All right. There's 25. I love how people assume I'm in control.
I've got a question that's relative to a computer.
Sure, Gary. Go ahead. Sorry, Maggie.
I open up a weather page. And it's hidden from me. Periodically, I would see a very small strip along the bottom, and then that I could drag that Excel spreadsheet or whatever up. Now I have where I cannot see anything. It says that the application is open. There is nothing on my screen. I can't find it.
Do you still have the cable to your monitor plugged into your laptop?
I've done it both ways.
I would double check that.
No, I've done it both ways. And I understand that I thought maybe what was happening is on the modem, not on the monitor, but it wasn't visible to me. So I've unplugged that totally.
Gary's using a Macintosh. Mm-hmm. Well, in this research, this is a complaint you hear from Windows all the time, and I never hear it from Macintosh unless there's something screwy going on with a secondary monitor.
Well, in that secondary monitor, whenever I would unplug that in the past when it was functional,
yeah,
then whatever was on that would come into my...
That's Mac. Right. That's the way it should work.
Now, it's plugged in, not plugged in. It's even at times... when I don't know if it was plugged in or not. As I said, I would see the very slightest little amount. I couldn't see I'd opened an Excel spreadsheet. But then at the bottom, I would see the slightest amount, and I could then drag that up.
Yeah, and that's typically the way that works. If it goes off screen, there's always that to grab.
It's not there.
If it's not there, then my first assumption is it's in a monitor that doesn't exist. It thinks that it can put it over here, but there's nowhere to put it. And so it's hanging out over here with this quadrant, but it needs to know that you don't have that quadrant available.
So maybe what I need
have
to
you restarted?
That monitor is even a possibility on the...
Well, just on a Macintosh, just unplugging it should eliminate that as a possibility. So I'm going to give you some advice on resetting hardware. And on the Macintosh, if you shut it down, and when you start it up and you hear a chime, right as you hear a chime, hold down the Command Option PR. Those four buttons all together. And what that'll do is it'll wipe the hardware settings. And your laptop will take a little longer to start up, almost insignificantly longer, but just a hair longer to start up. And that it takes a little longer because it goes out and it scouts your hardware again, and it refreshes those settings it's keeping in memory. And it could be something between your failed monitor and plugging in. It could be that the settings have just gotten corrupted. And what this will do is it'll flush out those settings, and when you come back on, it'll only know about that one monitor, and it should behave as though you only have one monitor.
Okay. And then for anybody who has a monitor for sale, I need one for about 3 weeks. If anybody has an extra monitor,
you want to rent one.
I'd rent it, or I'd buy it, I'd pay my firstborn.
I have a monitor.
Yeah.
I'll talk to you.
Have you cleared that with your child? Have you cleared that with your child?
It's not his choice. Does it do
chores? Yeah, I've got some yard work.
What other subjects do you have?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Maggie,
it's your turn.
She's on the telephone.
Maggie said
no. Ah!
Maggie's quoting you.
You lost your turn. Hey, I'll bring up some funny stuff. I don't know if you guys... follow much tech news. I listen to a publication called The Verge. I don't know if any of you have heard of The Verge. It's called The Verge. The Verge is very interesting. They do blogs and videos and podcasts, and they've got good tech news, but they've also branched into cultural stuff. And what is interesting is they've been around for a long time. And they're at CES right now, covering getting ready to cover the show. I think it started yesterday. And what they discovered is that AT&T is announcing a TV service called Verge TV. Mm-hmm. And the Verge, the publication, I mean, it's really, it's well fortified. It's got lots of money, and they have a reputation of really provoking these ISPs and communications companies. So it's going to be kind of fun to watch how they deal with AT&T treading on their trademark, because it is very much their trademark. They actually own the domain verge.tv. And so it's kind of, it's going to be an interesting battle to watch. And I think one of the first shots was fired this morning. The Verge has written up an article pointing out that AT&T has taken the Galaxy SX or S8, the Galaxy S8, the current, not the latest Samsung smartphone, but the one they're currently selling in their stores and with their service. And a couple of LG phones, the LG V30 and V40, and they've changed the software to make a 5G icon appear in the bar. This is not 5G. And the Verge has decided to make this very clear to everyone that will listen, that AT&T is doing this ugly, deceptive marketing campaign using these older phones, and they have changed the graphic on the bar to say 5G and this little E next to it. And they're using 5G as an indicator of robust speed improvements, an extension of the speeds they were creating. And this will pop up when you're in certain AT&T cells where they have supposedly boosted the speed. But The Verge also went even farther to examine some of those areas, and there's nothing there. There's nothing to call it faster than what you would find under any other network. So it's a blatant marketing attempt by them to make it appear as though they're rolling out a 5G network when they haven't really even started.
That's funny.
Yeah, well, it is funny because it is funny because you've got somebody like me making you very aware as an AT&T customer, they're lying to you. Right? They're doing it to deceive you and to make you think something that's not actually happening. And The Verge is going to be putting out a number of these stories. They're going to be calling AT&T on all their shit while they're suing AT&T for infringement of their trademark.
What do you need to know, Maggie?
Go ahead, Maggie.
My turn. Okay. Is anyone here that bought the satellite TV just before Christmas? I don't know who that was.
Oh, the one out of Mexico City.
Oh, the satellite internet, you mean.
Internet, excuse me.
She's not here right now,
is
but
that
I...
you? TCS?
Yeah.
I'd like to hear how it's working for you, right? Okay, so you're not... Programs aren't freezing? Anything you're streaming isn't freezing?
Well, yes. If it's on Wi-Fi, I do get the NBC, but then it's also plugged directly into the little...
So maybe we'll back up a bit.
Yeah.
It feels like from what you were telling me is that it's very similar to X-Pro in the way the hardware. Your experience is there's something on your roof, cable comes down into the house, right. Plugs into your home network. And when you were talking about the Wi-Fi just now, I'm imagining that you're not getting enough bandwidth through your Wi-Fi connection.
It shows it very strong because we bought the extra router, which you hooked up.
Mm-hmm.
And other channels seem to work okay, but the Amazon and Netflix takes a long time. I have the screen and then I click on a program and nothing happens.
Huh. And you feel like you get a better experience if it's plugged in directly with the cable.
What is plugged in?
We're talking
from the dish. Well, actually, it comes from the router.
So your router has to be by a TV set.
Well,
no.
It I don't believe that what you're describing is related to the service more than it's related to your infrastructure. Yeah, it could be that there's some interference with, because your other Wi-Fi spot is like right below the TV set.
That's the one that I
want. Right.
Yeah, because they've got a Wi-Fi hotspot in the back of their house where the connection comes in from the satellite service, and they have a cable that runs across the length of the house. And on the other side of the house, they've got another Wi-Fi connection. So it's feeding that router. And if I understand what you're saying correctly, is that if you use the TV on Wi-Fi, on that Wi-Fi spot under the TV, you get worse performance than just having the cable plugged directly into the TV. So these problems are easily mitigated, and they have little to do with the satellite service. The satellite service is providing you with very reasonable service.
Yes, I'm happy. And it's how much a month?
Well, we just went with the 20 meg, and it's $50.
And the installation was 15,000.
1,500 pesos? 1,500 installation. Well, how would that work at my house?
It would work. Well, they would need to know if they have, because here's the way I understand it. They have got a satellite drop in certain areas, and then they're shooting it out at you through a Wi-Fi system, very similar to the way X-Pro works, but I think X-Pro is working off of Telmex and Megacable. Well, it gets down to, I mean, what determines whether these work well or not is coverage, your coverage area, and use. How many are you competing for that connection, if that makes sense? And so you can talk to them in Hermosillo and find out if they cover your area. I wouldn't be surprised if they do. They said they cover my office when I talked to them. And they would come out, or Hector would come out and set it up. And probably the only thing that I thought was significant about their service is their upload speed isn't all that fast. It seems like it's limited to below a megabit uploading.
But he upped it for us because it was about two.
So it can go up to two?
Well, it wasn't two, but and I said that's kind of low, and the technician called Hector, and they made it higher.
Hmm, interesting.
Just this morning, there's a discussion on
Vivo. It's a difference that matters to me because I do things like publish podcasts and web pages and send files to the internet. But for most people, what we're really talking about is the speed of the click. When you go to a web page and you click something, how long does it take for that click to get back to a server before it starts downloading information? And so some of you using a satellite service like this might notice after the click waiting slightly longer. And I remember when I used to use a satellite dish in the office, the experience was click, wait, dump. All the information came down. Click, wait, dump. All the information comes down. I suspect it's a much more comfortable experience than what I'm describing right now, and I bet most of you wouldn't notice the click time.
I had X-Pro, and the problem happened when there were more people in town. Our connection was in the tank. We had X-Pro years ago. Hector guaranteed me that we have a specific spot, and we're guaranteed to have that service no matter how many people.
Are you using a VPN as well?
I do, but I need help with the VPN, but I'm not ready because I'm still watching the program.
My concern is just wires being exposed, cable being exposed like they are where we live, they're covered in salt.
That's the one I have.
Sounds like you still have to.
This is the capacitor box you're talking about.
I have it.
$140, that seems like a reasonable thing to have. You can build it for 30? I probably couldn't build it for 30, but... Hey, can you forward me that link? Can you email me that link?
Yeah?
Yeah?
You're in the computer club. I'm sure you know how to do that.
I'll do it at home.
I'd appreciate that, Jim. Thank you. Yeah, I'd be interested in taking a closer look at a capacitor box.
What else do you have that's funny?
What else do I have that's funny? Well, here's an interesting thing. Did you guys see 2 months ago when they detained the second in charge of Huawei in Canada to hand over to the United States? So I don't know what's happened with that. I don't know if she's still detained. They must have let her go. They must have let her go. But I just read an article that since that happened, they have detained 13 Canadians in China. Three of them are still detained. And this article is not that old. I think this is just from... Yeah, retaliation, absolutely. So it's not necessarily funny, but it's interesting.
Funny. On CBS this morning, the morning show, they were talking about the convention and AI.
Oh,
they have a robot now that looks kind of like an Ewok. And it's fuzzy and soft and supposedly huggable. And the more you hug it, the more it realizes what you like in a robot. They're encouraging you to get two because you've been snuggled with it on the couch or in bed.
No, that's funny.
That's the funniest thing I've heard so far. Yeah. Do you happen to remember the robot's name?
No. It's really cute, but on the other hand, it's $1,000 a pop for a robot.
Do you have one?
Not yet.
That's about the price, but I'm sure he'll
You know, I can't help but think that that's going to get embarrassing at some point when somebody comes over and starts playing with your robot. How have you been touching it?
it apparently starts like you would train a dog.
Right.
It'll follow you from room to room.
Why is this robot humping my leg?
How about please pick up after your robot?
Yeah, right.
Where's your plastic bag?
Where's your bag? Yeah. Maybe the robot picks up after itself.
Ray, what other funny things do you have?
Yeah, the one I saw. I'm sorry?
What other funny things do you have?
That's enough. That got me going this morning. It's almost a penguin shape.
This is getting weirder.
It was cute.
Getting weirder.
It's cool, but it's furry.
Better stop while you're ahead.
Yeah. We'll wait till you can bring it to show and tell. You can bring it to show and tell.
I will. When
why don't we end this? Let me give you a I'm cutting you off, Ray.
Damn.
Let me give you an app recommendation. We were talking about wine at the beginning. I'm going to talk about driving at the end. Don't use both these apps at the same time. I don't know if you've discovered it yet or not. If you have an Android phone, Android Auto, I've just fallen in love with this app. It's from Google. It's amazing. If you are somebody that would like to take your phone and stick it on the dash of your car and use it as bringing smart to your car, this is a great app to do it. I've got a holder on the window, and I pop my phone right in there, and I start Android Auto. Android Auto immediately changes my interface to big buttons that are easy to see and relegates me to three different tasks. I can listen to media. It's like a headset button. I can do mapping in GPS. That's like a trip button. And I can deal with phone calls. So three buttons. That's the robot.
Now, look who researched it, okay? It wasn't me.
Oh, wait. That's robots from 2017.
Well, it's very similar.
Yeah, because that's not furry.
This was furry.
Okay. So Android Auto, what it will do is it'll look in your list of apps, for example, to listen to media. It'll look in your list of apps and list them under the media app, under the media button as being compatible with Android Auto. This is important to me because I listen to podcasts. I use a podcast app called Podcast Addict, and it's compatible with this, and that means I can hit the media button, hit my app, which appears as a bar across the phone, very easy to read, and I can get into it, and I can start listening to something, and I can flip over to mapping, and it immediately shows me where I am on the map. When Android Auto is running, I can talk to it. It's the only time I have my phone set to be talked to. And so while the app's running, I can say, okay, Google. Anybody's phone go off? Okay, Google. Nobody's phone went off. Okay, Google, take me to Club Deportivo, and it will write the map. Actually, Club Deportivo is a bad example because I tried it. Tequila's is a good example. I'm getting ready for this. In fact, before I finish off, I'm getting ready for the Smartphones for Dummies thing that's happening on Thursday, 7 o'clock, Club Deportivo. That's why I know this doesn't work to map to the Club Deportivo. That's a Google Maps thing. It is not an Android Auto thing.
Attendance is mandatory.
It is not mandatory. Not mandatory.
Do you want us?
It would be nice.
The other question.
Yeah.
Would you prefer we don't?
I would appreciate a friendly audience, not a bunch of hecklers. Thank you, Jim.
Are you going to record it?
I will record it. Well, that's our plan. Richard and I are going to record it so that we can put it up on YouTube. So anybody that shows up doesn't have to feel like they need to take notes.
What time?
It starts at 7. I think doors are open at 6:30.
So is the bar.
Yeah. There is a bar. So come and let this information wash over you. The Android Auto, back to Android Auto, the Google mapping, you can ask it. You can say, okay, Google, take me to Cinemex in Guaymas. Okay, Google, take me to Tequila's. And it will write out the map from where you are to where you're going, and it will start the navigation without you touching the phone.
Wow. And
if you get text messages while you're driving, you can hit a button to reply, and it will talk to you. It'll read you the text message, and you can talk to the text message. That's right.
Okay, or do you just say Google?
My experience is okay, Google.
Okay, Google?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Android Auto.
I wonder if there's an equivalent for iPhone.
It is a freebie. It is Google though, so everything that's free means you're the product, right?
Going to follow you.
Yeah, nothing's for free. It is keeping track of your locations. Sure. It's keeping track of everything you do, and it's increasing the ability to market to people better. Because advertising is what we're driving this country on.
Well, we've been using Waves.
We could save the rainforest if there were just pop-up ads on every tree. That would justify the tree being there.
There you go.
You've been using what? There's a bunch
Waves.
Of
Waves.
Waves.
Like
yeah.
Waves.
No. Waves. Like you may find that Waves, because Google.
Is that on Apple?
Yeah.
Waves.
Well, it's actually owned by Google, isn't it?
I don't know Waze. He just took the phone. But
yeah.
It's on our iPhone.
And there is an Apple equivalent. I've not played with it. And I think it's Apple Auto.
Android Auto for...
Yeah. There is an equivalent for Apple, and I can't remember the name of it at the moment.
What's Waze for?
Waze. Is that a GPS?
Yes.
He just got a new Apple, that's why.
Yes.
Hey, you know what? I know what it is. Waze is no longer needed on Android because it's integrated into Google Maps.
Oh, okay.
So
Waze is Waze, I believe. Waze?
Waze?
I think so. And it is a GPS system for your thing. But what we really like is it tells us the speed limit as we're going along. And our car is in... how do you spell it, Bill? Bill, well, how do you spell it?
W-A-Z-E.
Okay, they say Z. But
Z.
Yeah. So, the Canadian way is Z. Yeah.
Well, it also does other stuff. Like you can report traffic stops. You can report police things. Well, actually, I think they got in trouble for that.
Well, there's...
Are they still doing it?
It tells us, you know, something on the side of the road ahead. Or watch out for the construction.
2 weeks ago or three, it said police ahead.
Police ahead.
And it shows you where on the map where the...
Because I remember there was, they got in trouble in one state, at least one state brought it up, where they were, where you can report things that you see so that other drivers don't have to experience them. And what it was being used for is people were reporting speeding traps.
Yeah.
And so it would pop up, cop up, up on the road, slow down.
How about border crossings?
No.
No, it won't tell you like wait times or anything. We have other apps for that. But
there's a couple.
There's one is just a website that we use.
And what was that one called that they gave you?
Mr. Border.
The GPS.
Right now it's reporting 45 minutes at Nogales.
North or south?
Mr. Border. I'm sorry. I'm just understanding what you're telling me.
You can always
Mr. Border.
Yeah. Mr. Border.
But you never get the time.
And this will tell you wait times. That's
wait
great.
Wait times going into the U.S.
People don't understand.
They don't give you wait times coming into Mexico.
How about distinguishing between downtown and truck stop?
Mr. Border, you can check all of the different crossings.
That's great, because I've been doing a Google search for border times as I'm approaching it and reading a website from the U.S. government.
Mm-hmm. But
the U.S. government one has one.
It's a reported thing.
They're not there anyways.
Oh, hey, you know...
Is anybody having problems with
that? Since we're talking about borders at this moment, one of our last meetings, somebody was recommending get in the far lane. As going across the border. You guys remember that?
Yeah.
I wholeheartedly agree with that. I made the mistake of going through. When you're going through Mariposa,
go to the far right or the far
left? Go to the far right.
Oh.
Go past the old truck route to there's a second turnoff for the truck route. So, you know, you come over the hills and you come in, that's one way, and then off from deeper in the city, you come in. That lane services like four different lanes to go across the border, and this lane services like two. And I had exactly the experience that I don't know who was describing it last time.
Chester, maybe.
What was it? I want to say it was Chester that was telling us about it. And I had my doubts. And when I approached, I'm like, oh, God, this is what he was talking about. We've been sitting here watching traffic just whiz past us.
You've gone this way.
If I'd gone to the other side, I would have been in that traffic.
In the left lane.
In the right. The right lane is the one you want.
The right lane is the
short
one.
Right.
And then you go central.
That's right. You got You got like three opportunities to go across the border. You've got the first truck route crossing, the second truck route crossing, and then downtown.
So right next to where the RVs go.
I've forgotten the name of the street.
So the second...
The first one is where the RVs go.
The GPS takes you down there, too.
Okay. It's that second...
The second one.
But you go around past that...
I don't know about the tire store. Is there a tire store right there?
Yeah, but it is very well marked.
You're talking about going into the U.S.
Yes, but you're going deeper into Nogales than the first turnoff. You're going to the second turnoff for the truck route.
Downtown.
Not all the way downtown.
You have the truck stop or the downtown?
The truck stop has two entries. They have one, the very first one you come across. That's the left side. There's the second one. That's the right side. And then there's downtown.
All kinds of people.
And it's the second one you want to take.
Yep. And all the traffic you can't make that. Yeah. You're down to a bigger vehicle.
It's the old truck.
You don't go a while to figure out what the hell that if you see the left turn lane.
Do you really bypass the toll road? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Right.
But times a year.
Yeah, you bypass the toll road.
I went up on New Year's Day.
Oh, that's good to know. Yeah, because I took the toll road because that's what I normally do. And I watched what Chester was explaining to us. It's like, I'm just sitting here. I'm just twiddling my thumbs. I'm watching tink, tink, tink. This whole line of traffic is for two lines. And I'm watching the line that comes from the second entrance where you bypass the toll road. And they're zipping through. They got four lanes open for people to zip through. And they've got like an easy pass or whatever that's called on that side. So that's where like the local traffic's zipping through.
There's no trucks on the road that day. It's a holiday, so there's no trucks.
So I just thought I would mention that to you guys because that's the experience I had going up for Christmas.
This year was different.
Yes.
I was.
Coming down doesn't matter.
No, exactly.
You never stop. Well, you've got to get
Well, we are done, I guess. We're out of here. That's the end of the first meeting of 2019. Thank you for being here with me.
Santana. Thank you for singing Happy
Birthday.
Yeah.
It was almost as nice as the grandchildren.
Yes. Clean bathrooms. Hot coffee.
And we will meet again next Tuesday, 9:15 to 10:15-ish here in Tequila's. Bring your tech topics and questions. Say that again. That's right. If you want to hear my presentation on smartphones for dummies, come to Club Deportivo. 7 o'clock we'll be starting, 6:30. The bar is open. The doors are open. Please come join us. I am Scott Stimson. If you have computer issues, you're looking for help and advice anywhere on the internet, please get a hold of me. You can reach my offices at 226-0209. You can find me on internationalcs.net. If you're interested in the Computer Club, any of these recordings, our podcast, look for the San Carlos Computer Club wherever you get your podcasts, or look for our website. We do a blog at sccclub.org. If you're looking for our YouTube, it's real easy now. Just go to youtube.sccclub.org. I made a web address. You can type in youtube.sccclub.org, and that will take you to the San Carlos Computer Club's YouTube channel. Until next time, check on. We'll see you next Tuesday.
That's it. CarPlay.
CarPlay.
I put Android Auto out.
I've never worked with CarPlay, but it's supposed to be the equivalent.
CarPlay is the equivalent.
I do have a ride, but thank you.
It was God.
What I do?
Are you off?
I am off.
Spilt milk. Okay, so look, I got on the Google.
Wait, I'm not off of this. Hold on a second.
Shoot.
Let me turn this off.